The health and safety of all students on campus is at the forefront of thought of President and many others across campus, our student athletes in particular. Joining us today is Dr. David Kaufman and our head trainer, Sally Nogle. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
I'd like to go through a number of topics talking about healthcare, talking about maybe some of the perceptions that individuals have and maybe some of the realities of how we address. I'll start with you, Sally. Taking care of a group of 800 student athletes is your responsibility, specifically with football. Talk about the daunting task that is on a daily basis.
Yes, the health care of our athletes is very important, and including the mental health care of our athletes. And so it is, for our 12 certified athletic trainers on our staff, it's a lot of work. We spend millions of dollars actually on their health care. And I think it's probably the best health care they'll ever have in their life because we're readily available every single morning, every single day after practice, with team physicians and with our staff. So their health care is important because they can't stay on the field or the court or in the pool without having their health be there for them to compete.
Concussions is something that we want to go into some detail on the conversation, receiving a lot of national and regional conversation, and well that it should. What are some of the other issues before we go into concussions that really jump to the forefront of concerns that you have in seeing students and student athletes regularly?
I think right now the climate is the mental health aspect is very important. We've realized that it affects everything in their lives if they have mental health issues. It affects their schooling. It affects their family life or social life. So we've focused on that more the last couple of years, but obviously that we still have the knee sprains and the shoulder sprains and strains. And so depending on the sport will depend on which body part tends to get injured more.
I want to sort of, before we go to concussions, both of you have children who played sports, and so you've been a parent with that. One with a sport in hockey that's a little bit more collision oriented, though basketball has its moments with unprotection of a hit getting hit in the head and those kinds of things. So we often think about these injuries as football or these high profile sports that are getting all the attention. And if you were to think about and your children are now, you know, doing very, very well beyond their time at college, what kind of advice would you provide to parents of kids who are in the sport about two or three things, given your professional experience, that they should be worried about and looking for as you think about whether it's concussions or it's other kinds of things that would be the, to pay attention to and have somebody else sort of assess the situation? Because if you're competitive at all, even as a president, you don't want to give up playing, you know, and you're not always the most honest broker of how you feel. Both from a physical as well as a mental perspective. And so in many ways, you have to be as attentive to what people don't tell you, even now, as healthcare providers for our student athletes, as you were as parents when what your kids didn't tell you about how they felt after a game or a match.
That's a very interesting and intriguing series of questions. Both Sally and I are healthcare providers, and then we're both parents. And balancing that by looking and interacting with our children and trying to be sure that post-athletic event they continue to have stability in their lives is one of the most important things that parents can do. I think any good mentor would be able to look at the people under their charge and figure out, do they continue to do well? Do they continue to have joy in how they're competing? And does it bring balance to their life or does it make them unsettled? I think so. Just as Sally Nogle has said, the mental health aspects of sport needs to be put into the forefront more and more. Do they continue to be balanced? And then following that, knowing whether or not your student athlete that happens to be your child has any other health issues that have emerged, including having an event like a mild traumatic brain injury, and knowing them well enough to see if there's personality change or other cognitive disturbance that might make you worried. Of course, if an athlete comes off the field and is no longer using their right arm, you would hope that the parent would also notice that.
Right.
Watching your child play sport, you do have to listen to them. You know, my tendency would be to toughen up, keep going. It would be my natural tendency, but you'd have to listen to them. If they really complain about their injury or really say something's hurting, you have to look at it, get the help they need. With head injuries, again, notice changes in their personalities. My daughter had a concussion in soccer 1 year, and she all of a sudden didn't know where she was, and she was making no sense. So they pulled her off the field, and I went over, and I'm like, who is this child? And she started crying, and, you know, just to change it, I'm like, she's done. I mean, there's no way we're going to put her back in that game. So if they have symptoms or signs of things that are really, you know, they're limping or they're hurting, you know, you need to pay attention to that.
But I think I'll go back to your first point today. Paying attention to sort of mental health attitude changes, where sport no longer becomes fun, where their interaction, they withdraw into themselves. They want to sort of stay in dark places not just because they happen to be a kid with their video game, but because they're just sort of those subtle changes that may not have been an event that anyone could have seen. That occurred for them. That would be true of falling off your bike. I mean, if not, it'd be sport. But those are things that people need to be really alert to, because it's easy to see if my arm doesn't work or I'm sort of dragging my leg a bit. But all these other things that are a part of the brain, just applying to the concussion issue and the mental health of students, are really sort of very, very important to be attentive to.
Yeah, so if they start changing personalities, irritable, crying, any confusion or lack of, you know, they can't focus and they used to be able to focus, those are signs, you're right, that they may not pick up on themselves. And they might be saying, I don't know why I'm crying, and maybe it's because they had a head injury.
But a challenge, in one, the whole thing, head injury, I can understand that there is a point in contact where something happens and you do an assessment. You know, you have 4 years at Michigan State as an athlete or 4 years as a student. And you sort of have to get that freshman class and figure out where they're at in so many different aspects, health, nutrition, mental health has really got to be a challenge to get. They've got 18 years of their life out there, and now you've got them and you've got to take care of them in so many ways. It's not the old days of a trainer tapes the ankle. It's you've got to have a responsibility for trying to understand all aspects of their health and well-being.
Correct. And that's the key for us, is as we get to know them, then you do know the changes. But that freshman year is tough. We do screening at the physical time with some things for SADS, seasonal affective disorder, especially the kids that come from South that haven't been in winter before. So we'll watch them closer. But we also do some mental health screening. And if there's anything on their shows, then we will have them talk to us about that, talk to the team physician about that, to get them, you know, trying to stop it before it gets worse. Some kids come in on medications. Every time I see a doctor, we ask a few questions about mental health just to make sure that we aren't missing something there. So we're pretty attentive to it, but they do have to be honest with us too.
And you're also doing some baseline screening about conditions of the brain. Anyway, we talk about how that's changed over time as we know more about repetitive injuries as opposed to just one gigantic collision.
One of the most interesting things that I've observed here at Michigan State during the 6 years that I've been allowed to participate as a team physician is how science has been inoculated into the equation. Each of our student athletes that is involved with a contact or collision sport has computer-generated neuropsych testing to specifically baseline what their capabilities are in a very scientific way. Each of them has a complete physical examination, including neurologic examination, prior to competing. And that allows us a baseline, President Simon. If there's any alteration, we then have the baseline to determine whether or not they've suffered a concussion on that basis. So it is the introduction of science into determination that's been one of the most pleasing things to have observed.
But we have to also recognize that brain science is really an evolving discipline, that we know more and more about it, and there are clearly things that as your daughter goes off and becomes a physician and finishes her PhD and physician scientist, you know, she's leaving and going out and looking at patients at a time when we know a lot more about what to look for, what genetic markers, blood markers, you know, computational data lets us put a lot of that stuff together because it isn't the same for each individual. But, you know, but this is still evolving about what we can do, even with all of this testing.
The evolution of neuroscience is one of the most exciting things in front of us. The technology and the ability to probe various aspects of neurochemistry and neurophysiology have expanded in an exponential fashion. And it is without doubt the most exciting aspect of being a neurologist is realizing how far we've come literally year by year in terms of the advances that have emerged. In terms of how the brain absorbs force and dissipates force and the reaction to force, that is beginning to emerge in a more scientific way in understanding what are the long-term effects of mild traumatic brain injury, how significant are they, how much of this is hysteria, and how much of this is science. And all that is emerging as we move forward. A very exciting moment in neuroscience.
Well, I know you're both of you, a Hall of Fame trainer, both of you are very actively involved nationally in these discussions. MSU's data under your leadership and has been part of these big national studies, Big Ten, Ivy League, well before the NCAA sort of got into the mix with their medical director. And now I know you're part of the national conversations in trying to interpret and better understand all of these data.
Actually, collaboration with the Department of Defense as well.
So it's incredibly interesting that the presidents of the Big Ten and Ivy League made a decision to join forces, and the exchange of information over the last 4 years regarding the Big Ten universities and the Ivy Leagues has resulted in numerous collaborations between two great academic and athletic conferences. The most recent was in July in Philadelphia, where there was tremendous opportunity to share with individuals what is happening at Michigan State University along with its collaborating institutions. And this was on two fronts. One was the use of functional MRI to look at these advanced MRI techniques for prognosis. Once we're able to establish prognosis, then treatment strategy for mild traumatic brain injury will come next. And it's interesting, being in collaboration with Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Northwestern, Nebraska, sharing these data in just the most polite and innovative way off the athletic field. So when it comes down to science, the ability to collaborate is just wonderful based on these things.
I want to probably to do a pitch for Marcus Danos and his little headband. So I'll tell our listeners this is probably, you might see this as a plug. I was really impressed. So I'll say this about Sally, you and David. Our faculty members had an idea about how to think about pressure hits, whatever you want to call it, that people might receive during a game. They had tested some helmets with some technology in them and decided that they weren't, they were calibrated for really, really significant hits, but not for the sort of persistent, I don't know what your official term is, dings or whatever you want to call it, when kids get a little bit so they're not exhibiting the huge symptoms, but it's still a challenge to make sure that we're not on a pathway of something more serious. So they came up with this headband idea. And without, what I was really impressed with, without any intervention of anybody, they came over and said, will you guys try this? You know, I mean, a bunch of chemists, right? Yeah. A bunch of chemists doing nanomaterials. And then they want to grow a nanomaterial that can be can figure out how hard a collision is, and then show a red blotch on a headband so that you guys have a better chance of understanding what happens.
Yeah,
and you guys embraced it and you tried it out. Coach D'Antonio let it happen, Mark, And I think that's a culture of sort of innovation and trying to continue to find better ways to augment our already strong system.
Yes, they presented to us on the headband, and it was very intriguing, and we discussed it. You know, Dr. Kaufman and Dr. Pearson and I discussed it, and it wasn't going to interfere too much with, you know, our practice, obviously, to get us ready for a game. And the players had a volunteer, and the players, we had a group that were really good about volunteering and kept giving feedback, and they kept doing the next prototype.
This was last spring.
Yeah, we went through each day. Someone would practice with it on and then give them feedback. And I looked at it as it's a really neat idea because it's kind of a low-tech idea, so that youth would be huge for the youth population because it's not a sensor that costs thousands of dollars. It's a very affordable item, and when it gets to the market, I think that parents could then go home and pull this headband off, look at that, and say, yeah, my child's had too many 30G forces today. Therefore, tomorrow they're not going to hit, you know, or whatever. I think it's really for the future of youth football and maybe high school into college. I don't know. But I think it's really important to help parents identify when their child has gotten too many hits and maybe needs to back off for the hitting.
Because this is really it detects smaller hits. I don't want to – not yeah. that – because there's no way if you bump your head – It's not a pressure, a force on your head. I mean, no matter, you know, and you get up with it. And a lot of those little ones may have as much devastating reactions as one big collision that you can identify and treat more directly. And that's what I think the research is evolving to, depending on the person. I mean, because this is all still sort of genetic dependent almost about what happens with people who have similar circumstances. But your view about what you know, so I take my headband off and it's got some red spots on it, and not a big blotch, but a red spot.
So I'd like to digress for just a second. Sally Nogol calls me up and says, I got two chemists I want you to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, what's the idea? And she tells me they're measurement scientists from the chemistry faculty, and they want to meet you in the football building. I'm thinking, what is this? And there they were. They look like chemistry professors, and they talk like chemistry professors. But they're measurement scientists, and they had an idea that if you use a low-tech device, it would be all sport, all gender. Right now, football players have the ability to wear a helmet that can detect force imparted to the helmet. Their idea was all gender, all sport, so that female soccer players could use this. No computers, nothing. But by using chemistry techniques in terms of these micro balloons that change color, that you would be able to detect smaller blows to the head in a way that could be of some value as either an athletic trainer or as a team physician. It does not make the diagnosis of concussion, but as an extension of the clinical exam, I believe will be valuable. And it is, without question, one of the most interesting things of working at a university that a neurologist and an athletic trainer get in a room with two chemists, and something remarkable comes out as a result. Where else could that happen? So from a clinical standpoint, in terms of disqualifying a player in real time, we are dependent upon the examination and the history. But if you have this additional thing of realizing that they've absorbed an 80G hit, that as an extension of the clinical exam would be quite valuable. An 80G hit equals a blow that would be described as substantial and could be associated with a concussion.
Okay. And a 30 is just the kind of bumping your head type.
It's still a significant hit, and it would depend on, for us, it's probably a subconcussive blow, yes.
Yeah.
For youth, it might be a blow that's significant. That's what they'd be able to check, was that, is it, you know, maybe the youth only, they need to really have this light up at 30 Gs, whereas for us, it's 90 Gs. Mm-hmm. I think they're very clever because it shows a star if you get into, you know, they're seeing stars if they get a significant blow. I thought that was clever on their part. But it does show you have a lot of subconcussive blows, too, and so you know that they've had a lot of hitting today, which is important to know too.
Because maybe we don't, maybe we just sort of protect their brain a bit by limiting some hitting tomorrow, even though there's no symptoms or sign, or even by protocol. A responsibility to take them out. If you really care about kids and their mental health and these kinds of things, it's just a good precaution.
I think that that's an interesting way to look at it. Let's look at 2 million soccer mothers throughout the United States worried about sending their daughters out to play soccer, and they hid the ball and all the other things that happen on a soccer field, wearing a lightweight band that also would assist with control of hair and a variety of other things. And then to be able to use that same device to determine whether or not a child is winded or is in pain or actually has suffered a significant blow to the head would be a tremendous advance. And I am very enthusiastic about this. Furthermore, Doctors Blanchard and Dantos presented this at the Big Ten Ivy League meeting in July, and there were gasps. People understood immediately how the simplicity was the key. It is a low-tech, simplistic tool that will be of value. Mm-hmm. And to hear somebody from the Harvard College gasp over an advance at Michigan State, well, that was quite pleasing, that sort of thing.
But it wouldn't have happened if you all weren't open to this kind of collaboration and continuing to sort of push your own understanding of this field in ways that are pretty significant.
I think as you go through this, and those that are listening to the show, the research that's done, we talk about some of the innovative technology that's out there. Football coach is listening to the show right now. A parent is listening to the show. High school sports are just getting underway, and I understand you can't give a comprehensive medical advice answer to this question, but what are the few things that you would want to have those parents and those coaches to know where we're at in the process with concussion research and what they should be doing to be responsible coaches at the high school level?
I think the key is identifying the concussions. If you don't have a low-tech technology like the headband, you have to watch the players. You have to watch if they have symptoms, if they aren't being themselves. They have headaches or throwing, any symptom, they need to be taken out of the game. That's the biggest thing. In the past, we let them sit for 5 or 10, 15 minutes, put them back in. Nowadays, they need to be taken out of the game and evaluated by a healthcare professional before they go back into that sport, whether it's soccer, field hockey, ice hockey, whatever it is, they need to be removed and checked out before they return.
I think the cultural changes that are emerging over time also, realizing that we want warriors on the playing field, but we want them to be safe warriors. And that sort of cultural change, I think, is an important thing that's coming upon us now.
We're also proud of what you do in this area and well beyond. We're appreciative of having you by our side every day, and thanks for joining us today on WJR.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.